You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 250 of the Shared Security Show. And joining me this week are my fantastic co-hosts, Kevin Johnson and Scott Wright, as well as very special guest, Katie Teitler, Senior Security Strategist at Axonius. Welcome to the show, I think for your first time, Catherine. You're on the show.
I believe so. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Good to see everybody, even on screen.
This is a little bit of a reunion for Kevin and myself. We have not seen you in a long time.
Too damn long.
It's been too long.
A long time. Yeah. Yes. Travel is just starting again. It's all good. But
it is.
I do like the reduced travel idea.
So I've just gotten back yesterday from, I think it was 8 weeks back and forth around places. I actually have a week home next week and I'm thrilled by it. So we were joking about it and we decided that basically all of the travel calluses had worn off. And so now I've been miserable for the last 8 weeks. I don't know another way to put it, right? Like I traveled a ton. Then I went, 2 years without traveling.
We all did.
And then all of a sudden it was like, ha ha ha, you're back. And I have been reminded how much I hate people in airports. And I also want to go back to, I believe it should be a rule that if you design hotel rooms, you have to live in your design for a month before they're allowed to actually put it in a hotel. Because hotel rooms just are not really designed for people to be in.
They're just not designed for you, Kevin.
I don't think it's me that, you know, the one spot in the room that the ironing board fits should have an outlet close enough for an iron.
I agree with you on that.
That's true. You do usually have to drag the ironing board halfway across the room.
Exactly. Like, it's like,
why is that?
What the heck? I had to actually move the couch in the room I was just in to get to the only outlet near where an ironing board fit. I had to move the couch.
Maybe we'll have another episode of Kevin's travel nightmare stories. That might be fun.
I don't think I've ever had nightmares. Maybe. I mean, I've never had maybe a guy these days. I thought was dead.
Well, that's good. But
somebody pee on you once, Kevin?
Yes, I had somebody pee on me once.
On an airplane. We've told that story a few times, I think, on the show.
I was knocked unconscious on a plane.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember that. That was the first time we met. Yes. Oh, this is a good story.
Now you have to tell it.
Kevin was recommended to me as this amazing speaker. Best expert in mobile you'll ever find. Kevin Johnson.
All a lie.
Hold on. Well, so I was like, all right, well, I need somebody to speak. And it was a webinar. And so I communicate with Kevin. Seems great. We create a presentation. Seems great. We set everything up. Seems great. I ping him the day before and say, hey, Kevin, just a reminder, we're on for tomorrow at X time. We're using this presentation, da, 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 da. Go through all the logistics. And I get back this weird reply. And I'm like, I don't think he knows who I am. So I write back again and I clarify and he writes back, sorry, what topic? And I'm like,
oh no.
Oh, I don't know what to do. It's less than 24 hours at this point. So I'm like, maybe he's just busy. Mm. The next day we get on the webinar platform to start recording and he says, remind me again what we're talking about. This is like 15 minutes before we're going to start. Somehow he gets on, he gives a fine presentation, but he had no idea who he was giving it for, what topic it was. I guess the slides were a good visual reminder, but he had been knocked unconscious and had probably a bit of a concussion and didn't remember why he was where he was, doing what he was.
There was There was no probably. I had had a concussion. They had had paramedics come onto the plane to take me off of the plane because I had been knocked unconscious by a bag. Sadly, it was my own bag.
Yeah, I mean,
the guy in the seat in front of me actually pulled his bag out, pulled my bag on top of myself. The guy sitting next to me actually told me that the guy knocked me unconscious, looked down and went, and walked off the plane.
Oh my gosh.
And I was actually on the phone with my wife to tell her that I had landed early, everything else like that, when I got knocked unconscious. And the guy next to me, who was a friend of mine, picked up my phone, said to her, "Kevin was knocked unconscious, he'll call you back," and hung up. Yes. So, sorry.
That is an amazing story. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with our audience. So hopefully everyone got a good chuckle out of that. But the reason we are here, besides hearing Kevin's travel stories, is to talk about Katie's article that she wrote. And I'll let you talk about the Reformed Analysts, which you can plug as well, which I highly recommend everyone subscribing to. But she wrote an article called "Cybersecurity's Role in Combating Midterm Election Disinformation." And I thought this is a great topic to discuss because we have the midterms coming up, and this episode will be released on Monday. So that's tomorrow is when in the US here we're having our midterm elections. And there is a lot of talk about misinformation, disinformation, already a lot of controversy about an election that hasn't quite happened yet, even though early voting is taking place across the country. So we have that going on. But maybe before we dig into that exciting topic and maybe controversial topic, Katie, can you talk a little bit about yourself and your background and maybe a little thing about the Reformed Analyst?
Sure. So at present, I am a member of the dark side. I work for a cybersecurity vendor, Exonius. We are a cybersecurity asset management company and a SaaS management company in the CASM, or Cyber Asset Attack Surface Management space. Tons of acronyms going on here. And I was asked by our PR team to do a number of externally facing things, even though my role is technically an internally facing one. And so our amazing PR person set up this newsletter for me. She posts everything, formats it. So kudos to her.
It's
I don't even have to watch it.
I love it.
It's great. Before Exonius, I've been an industry analyst for a couple of short stints. I've run research programs and content programs. I ran content for events for a long time, loved that job, which is where I got to know Kevin and Tom and lots of other great people in the industry. So I have a little bit of a long background that weaves and turns throughout content creation, event planning, research, speaker wrangling, marketing.
Awesome. So kind of what inspired you to write this article?
So it really was the midterm elections, and speaking with our PR person, we knew this was coming up, and it's just such a big topic and has been over the last couple of years. And I think in this country, we're coming to a place that's a little better than we have been over the last few years. People are still up in arms, but I think the heat has been lowered a little bit. But that doesn't mean that the problems with election security aren't still there. But when I'm talking to most cybersecurity practitioners, the focus is on the equipment, the manufacturers, and everything that's done around the actual voting systems. And that's valid. I mean, obviously we need to be concerned about that as well as any other internet connected device. But the bigger problem that's a lot harder to tackle is this idea of misinformation and disinformation and stopping them, because there have been a lot of studies. If you read outside of cybersecurity and you just read about information's role in society, there have been a ton of studies that prove that misinformation and disinformation spread farther and wider faster than facts than truth, than data that can be verified. And it's such a problem in the US. I'm only going to speak about the US because that's where I live. That's where I do my research. It's such a problem in the US that there are people who will say at this point, well, you can't believe anything. And that's not actually true. There are information, there are data that you can rely on, but it takes so much work nowadays because everybody's got a platform. Like literally this newsletter is on Substack. I don't think my HR person did anything particularly special, just literally signed up. Maybe it cost a few bucks. I don't even know, yeah. But that's it. Anybody who has a computer can have access to some public platform where they can say anything they want. And then they can say, well, this is just what I heard. I've had this happen to me in my personal life. Somebody stating something that I know to be not fact. And they'll say, well, this is just what I heard. And I said, well, did you verify it? Well, this person's an expert. Really? What makes him an expert? Well, and you know, each time you ask those questions, they back away and back away. When it comes to the platforms that we have currently, it's easy to take sound bites. It's easy to take snippets of data and turn them around. And the unfortunate part is we are so overwhelmed with media, with writing, with, you know, vocal communication, that it's very, very, very hard to cull through all of this and find out what's true and what's not. And there are great companies, a new one called Althea Group, run by Lisa Kaplan, CEO, women entrepreneur, backed by Ted Shine and Kevin Mandia. Companies working on this misinformation and disinformation problem, because it's hard to know, even if you do your research, where the truth starts and where it ends sometimes. And yeah, that's what this is all about, because especially with politics, people get very tied to their beliefs. They get very tied to the people around them who have similar beliefs. And the more echo chamber you have, and the pandemic didn't help that, right? So then we were in a period of physical isolation. It was much easier to connect with only the people you wanted to connect with. The problem just, it's exponential. And so we really have to sort that out.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
I think for a lot of our listeners, it might be good to just help understand what's the difference between misinformation and disinformation.
Very important distinction. So misinformation is simply something someone heard and it's incorrect and it's unintentionally spread. So the person believes it to be true because they heard it. It's that, well, I heard it from someone response. Disinformation is intentionally created to mislead. It is intentionally either skewing the facts or not taking the facts into consideration. So it involves a malicious component to it.
So lying, essentially, or yes. Conning yeah. someone, or
that can be
false evidence. Yes.
False evidence. Yes. All those things. And that's interesting because depending on what you read and depending on the topic, and this could be even, you know, outside of politics, right? It's this is prevalent in lots of different areas and in life in general. I think of like, I heard this through the grapevine kind of thing. And you know how it starts with one person. And by the time it gets to the 10th person, it's almost a completely different story, even though it wasn't malicious. It's just the way that people interpret words, a saying. And by the time it gets to the end, it's almost completely different than the original author, right?
Exactly. That just brought to mind that game Telephone that we all used to play as kids, mm-hmm. sitting in the circle. That's the perfect example of misinformation.
And I think that one of the problems is, you know, Katie, you said, right, you know, they're an expert. Why are they an expert? What is, we have a level, and I know Tom and I and Scott have talked about this a lot. There is a level of trust you give to people you're connected to just because you're connected to them, right? And the lack of ability or knowledge or whatever on how to validate the thing you saw, right? And I talk to people all the time where they're like, oh, did you see? And you try to pin them down and they don't, well, why are you arguing? No, I'm not arguing with you. I'm trying to find out where this came from, right? I had a person I went to school with. She's smart as anything. She's great. And yet when I tried to get just feedback on where did you hear this? Because I don't understand. Like, I'm not doubting you. I'm not challenging you. I'm trying to get context so I understand it.
Yeah.
Just no idea. Scott?
Yeah, I think I was just going to say there's a really subtle problem, I think, that we haven't really talked about. And that is, we assume people actually want to know the truth. And it applies to both misinformation and disinformation when it gets spread, right? People, as you just said, Kevin, you know, you can end up in an argument with somebody, but if they don't really care about the truth, they want to believe what is comfortable for them or what, you know, what the people they trust believe. And they don't really want to dig any further to figure out where the sources are.
That's a really good point. Yeah. People are very stuck in their beliefs, especially when we talk about taking sides in politics. It's very polarizing. And, you know, for some people, this is what they're going to believe. And that's it. Nothing can change their mind, no matter what the information is. So Katie, how can we combat misinformation, disinformation? And I guess thinking both from a cybersecurity professional, but also just a general citizen, right? Especially with the midterms coming up.
Sure. It's complicated. And as I said, there are some companies who are trying to tackle this from a technological point of view. Third-party organizations that are trying to tackle it, like this Althea group, for instance. I personally believe that media platforms of all ilks have a responsibility to try to cut down on the amount of disinformation and misinformation that's spread. But as a cybersecurity practitioner, it's, you know, if you're not working for a media company, if you're not working for a company that, you know, has some equipment that allows this to happen, you know, what you can do is just look at your systems. It's about the attack surface. It's about access to different media, you know, whether it's Slack, you know, internal at your company, or, you know, the systems that you have, the data warehouses, the databases, data lakes. That's not necessarily specific to dis or misinformation, but making sure that you know where people can theoretically abuse systems to spread mis or disinformation, to take information, to add information that shouldn't be there. So it's all about knowing what you have. So all the databases, all the access points to them, how systems are being used, understanding where people can post, share, like, you know, maybe even having acceptable use policies about what employees can post when they're a representative of the company, right? There's a very fine line between infringing on somebody's, you know, right to free speech, but if they're representing the company, having acceptable use policies around what they can and cannot talk about. You know, if I'm on a podcast or if I'm giving a talk or if I'm in any public forum and somebody asks me my opinion about politics, I will say, you know, that's a private conversation. So you have to have limits, but because we're such a polarized nation regarding politics at this point, a lot of people feel free and our lives are so commingled, personal and work. So having those boundaries, Kevin, you're going to ask a question.
No, I'm going to say something that's a pet peeve of mine. Right, I want to disagree with something you just said, and I think it's important to disagree with it. There is not a fine line between infringing on your free speech. And the reason I say that is I hear this from businesses all the time. Well, you know, we don't want to infringe on people's free speech and we don't want to do that. Screw you. There is not a fine line. It is a massively clear line. If you are a company telling your staff that they are not allowed to, as the company, speak about this, that is not an infringement on your free speech. The only way to infringe on somebody's free speech is if you are a government agency telling somebody not to say this. And the reason I think this is important is because, I'm picking on you because you just happen to be the person who said it. companies are so afraid to tell people, stop saying that. Look, I'm a company. I'm allowed to say to my staff, don't talk politics in Slack. I haven't done that because SecureIdeas is a weird company. We talk politics all the time. You're allowed to do that. It is not an infringement. And if somebody is mad that their boss doesn't let them go online as the company and say, vote for this person, let the person be mad. We are so afraid of, and I'm a First Amendment. That's a hot button topic for me. When politicians violate the First Amendment, I'm the first person like, ah, right. If we stopped being afraid of saying to somebody, hey, you're spreading bullshit, stop spreading bullshit, as their boss, we would have better things, I think. Everybody's so afraid of it because people say all the time, it's such a fine line. It's not a fine line. It's only a violation of free speech if you're a government agency. Sorry.
Okay, fair. Kevin is my alter ego if I were an employer and own my own company.
Yes, there you go.
That's why I say I'm picking on you because you said it, but I know you know that. I know you understand that. And that's right.
We have a lot of feelings in the workplace these days. Scott, you have a comment.
And then there's another subtle thing I'll mention, which is the difference between an employer telling an employee they can or can't say something and the government saying it, and then a platform saying to its users, you can't say this, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people will say that's censorship. It's not really, from my point of view.
Well, that's why Elon Musk bought Twitter, right? Is because freedom of speech, as he says, even though Twitter has policies.
But that's the company's prerogative to do it. Right. But it just becomes when such a huge platform that is universally used and trusted in a way, then that position on whether or not people should be allowed to say certain things becomes contentious because it is kind of a gray area.
That's the whole thing about misinformation and disinformation and about shutting it down. It's not about free speech. It's about stopping lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is about stopping lies and lies. I'm no legal expert here. I'm no privacy expert. I'm no human rights lawyer, but where did people get the right to spread lies? And in the political case, it's specifically about other people.
First Amendment.
But that's not what the First Amendment says.
It absolutely does. The First Amendment protects lies. You are allowed to lie. There is no free speech means you're allowed to say whatever you want. Please keep in mind, that doesn't mean there aren't consequences to those speeches.
That's right.
We cannot pass a law that says you're not allowed to lie. The government is not allowed to say lying is bad, except in very specific cases. And I'm also not a lawyer, but I've read a lot about this. We can't governmentally stop people from spreading lies.
If you're a private platform, you can.
Absolutely. Right. And I agree with that. I'm just saying that your question was specifically, where did people get the right to lie? And the answer is the First Amendment.
I'm not sure that's how it was written. I wasn't alive a couple hundred years ago, but I'm not sure that was the The intent behind how it was written.
Here's the issue. It is absolutely the intent. And the reason is, here's the problem. The minute we start saying the government should limit stuff, let me ask you this, because I know you, and I'm not asking you a political question, but I'm going to use a political example. Would you be comfortable with Donald Trump deciding what you were allowed to say or not say?
I take the fifth.
Great answer.
You're not comfortable with it, right? And I would say the same thing to people who like Donald Trump. Would you be comfortable with Joe Biden deciding what you are allowed to say and not say? And the answer is, and I'm using those two examples because they're different parties, not right. And the answer is you're not comfortable with that because you don't agree with what that person says, whoever that person is, right? And that's why we don't want a law that says you're not allowed to say something. But the other part of what you said is absolutely accurate. Platforms are allowed to 100%, and we want them to be allowed to, block the ability to spread lies. We want them the ability yes. to say, hey, we fact-checked this and you're full of it. We want them to have the ability to say, you know what? You're an asshole. Get off of our platform. Right? Like all of that is absolutely right. something we want, right? And that's where we fall into the problem is that we mix those two things, we being everybody, right? We mix those two things. I'll also say, and I just saw it yet again this morning, and it speaks so soundly to me. There's a paywall on the truth, and the sites that share disinformation are always free, right?
Think about why that is. Because salaciousness yes. sells.
Yes.
You're right. Yeah.
And we are the product when we are on these platforms, and they want the views, they want the readership. I have a very controversial opinion that actual news outlets should not be able to sell advertising, nor should they be able to measure viewership in terms of their worth, and one is better than the other. And the reason I say this is because when you bring it in, we don't get truth in the information. We get what sells. I haven't actually watched news in years because of this. I hate when I would turn on the news and they'd have this dun 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 type of music. It's like, what the hell? This is not an action movie. I just want the news. I don't need that audio to tell me what the weather's going to be like. And that's literally what it is when you watch the news. And that kind of bias, even that little bit, is because they want to sell us. They want, you know.
Yeah.
And so whatever is juicier, and it's not going to be this boring piece of data, except to maybe nerds like me, looking at raw data, not so interesting to right. most people. They want this context. They want yep. excitement. And these free platforms, the more they get people talking, whether it's, you know, Kevin and I bantering back and forth. Kevin's right in all the cases. This is just true. I'm trying to be a little more PC, but throw it up. Whatever.
In all the cases, yes, you're being more PC.
Let's just call it what it is. I do agree with Kevin on all these counts. But people want that. They want the back and forth. I remember when I was at a company I had chosen a panel. I don't know, Kevin, if you were on it at that time, but I specifically picked two people who I knew would argue about firewalls. I knew they would. And pen testing. Firewalls and pen testing. And they went at it. Guess what was the highest rated session at that conference?
It was that one.
Yep.
People yeah. arguing like about the value show, right? Of...
That's right.
Yep.
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 Yep. That's true. So fascinating topic. But wrapping this up, Katie, how can our listeners find out more about you and the cool stuff you're working on?
Well, I now have this Substack newsletter, The Reformed Analyst, so they can definitely sign up for that. I don't know how many people have subscribed. My PR person, she's awesome. I think I called her HR before, but she's PR. She's amazing. I'm sure she keeps track of subscriptions. I am on LinkedIn. I'm Catherine Teitler. It's a horrible last name, I know. But you can look me up, Catherine.Teitler. I work for Exonius currently. I'm currently on hiatus from Twitter for aforementioned reasons. I also am a co-host on Enterprise Security Weekly. You can find me.
Yes. There. Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Well, maybe this will be one of our next highest rated episodes, even though I think this was a great debate, great points made, of course, by all parties. But thank you again for coming on the show, Katie. Great to catch up with you. Kevin, Scott, as always.
Great to meet you, Katie.
Thank you. You as well. This has been fun.
Yes, thank you. And for all of you, we will catch you all again next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.